traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Here we go in 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. I'm Jeremy Jackson, host of the Sports Medicine Broadcast, and we're here to help you promote and improve your practice as an athletic trainer. Coach Allen and Jamie Woodall started off their relationship kind of like, hey, coach, you're an a-hole. Hey, Jamie, you're overbearing. That's not a great way to start a relationship, but they've done some really great things once they kind of worked things out. So we've talked about that in part one of this series, the athletic trainer, athletic director partnership series, where Jamie and Coach Allen have done a lot of really good things together. And so we're going to hear about some of the good things they've done here. So if you missed the first part, you can go back and check that out. We'll go through a tiny bit of that as they finish telling their story this week and next. But check out the first part. So Elliot Allen, Jamie Woodall, welcome back to the Sports Medicine Broadcast.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thanks for having us.
Yep. So this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/thegoodlife. And then the one before was how it started. So if you want to check out the first part is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/how it started. And this is the good life, because this is again about what they've accomplished while working together. All right. So this is when everything is working well. Coach Allen, what has been your favorite part about working with Jamie Woodall?
I think she is such a problem solver. She does a great job of anticipating problems that are going to occur and having an answer for them. And she, you know, just how she treats people, how she treats our athletes, how she treats our coaching staff. It's definitely a joy to work with her.
All right, Jamie, do you feel like you anticipate problems, or maybe you're a really good BSer?
Maybe a little bit of both. I think some of it just comes with experience. You know, I started in my career in 2005 in the high school setting. And before that, I was in the hospital setting. And I think that the hospital setting was really good for me to have an experience of very controlled atmosphere where there are schedules and one patient at a time, or maybe one or two that you're kind of bouncing between. But for the most part, really good for me to be very young in my career and have that experience, then get into the school setting where things were a little more chaotic. And I realized really quickly that I needed to be highly organized, because there's so much in the day that you cannot plan for, that if you can organize the things that you know are going to happen or that you can anticipate happening, but so much of that just comes with experience.
All right. So Jamie, what is your favorite part about working with Coach Elliot Allen?
So Coach Allen is very patient and shows a lot of grace when the situation isn't going necessarily as he might have expected it to. I know that we talked about in the first session of this that I can come off very strong and have my overbearing opinions, but he was able to work through that with me and not shut down, not wanting, you know, it's not like he didn't want to work with me. He definitely wanted it to work. And one of the favorite things that as far as I'm concerned, that he says when he's problem solving with a coach or with a coworker is it best for kids? That's one of the first questions he'll ask. And at the end of it, he asks it again, is this best for kids? And that's probably one of the most impressive things that I saw in him consistently was just showing grace and wanting to do what's right.
You know, that's a fantastic quality. And one of the things that I like about our head coach here, or our athletic director, is that's one of the things that I always see is this best for all of the kids and not just the football kids or the football program, right? So is this best for all of the kids? And it really makes a big difference. So Elliot, I applaud you for that. Talk to me a little bit about how you came to that philosophy or where you saw that at work in your professional career as well.
My high school head coach, Jim Hamilton, was a lot like that. And I played for, through high school and college, I played for a bunch of guys that were not necessarily that way. I always appreciated it. And, you know, at the end of the day, you have to make a lot of decisions. And if you want to be consistent, and just do what's best for kids, it's kind of a guide. You know, you don't have to sit there and make everything great. Just at the end of the day, you ask, what, you know, is this good for kids? And if it is, then, you know, I think you're doing the right thing.
Fantastic. All right. So let's start us off with what's the big wow. So we're talking about how things got, you know, started off rocky, but now they've smoothed out. You made some really big improvements, some really great gains there for sports medicine, for the athletic healthcare. So tell me, what do you feel like was your biggest victory for sports medicine since y'all been working together?
Ooh, okay. So I have to kind of go back a little bit from when I first started at Brunham in 2018. And I kind of had this idea of what I was going to do. I was going to go in, I was going to take stock. I was going to get some things ordered. I was going to start with some procedures that needed to be put in place. And when I got into it, I realized I can't do any of those things until I organize and clean and get it to a clinic that I could work in. And I started getting very overwhelmed with what all needed to be done. And I thought, oh my gosh, I am going to forget something so simple like AEDs or something really big because I'm starting to get very overwhelmed with everything that needs to be done. And so I reached out to Bart Peterson, the chair of the Secondary Schools Committee for NATA. And I said, look, do y'all have like a checklist or something? You know, I mean, I've been doing this so long that I don't need something like that. But I'm so overwhelmed in this new job, I'm gonna forget something. And I can make my own checklist, but I'm probably gonna forget something, you know? And he said, funny you should ask, there's this program that we're starting, it's called PASS, P-A-S-S, and it's a checklist of sorts that lets you evaluate yourself on if you're hitting all the procedures and policies that are in place for athletic healthcare. I said, yes, please send me. And he said, well, it's not public yet. It's just in the pilot stage. We only have a few schools doing it. And he says, but I'll let you be a pilot school. And that guide helped me so much in making sure I didn't drop the ball on something big time compliance that maybe I was going to slip up on or not think about. And so through that, it guided conversations with the stakeholders that I had in Brenham that when I first got there, weren't really willing to have conversations with me because I was just an athletic trainer. And so I was having to go through Coach Allen to get things done. And something I wasn't used to, I can usually walk into an office, say, hey, I need this, justify it, and usually get it done. And I wasn't able to do that. And so I would say it's twofold. One, we changed the culture of healthcare for athletes in Brenham in that first year, hands down. And when you do that, those kids graduate, those employees move on to other school districts, and they remember what that athletic healthcare looked like. For example, there's an AP that became a principal in another district. She's in Hitchcock. And that athletic trainer is a classmate of mine from Sam Houston State. And she told him, hey, reach out to Jamie. And he goes, oh yeah, I know Jamie. So we've been collaborating. She wants it to look like what it looked like in Brenham. And I think that's one of the neatest things, but in highlighting what athletic trainers are truly capable of if you give them that platform.
All right, Coach Allen. So Jimmy said changing the culture of athletic healthcare. What do you feel like for you has been the biggest victory?
Well, I think it's kind of hard to measure this, but just the overall respect that our community and our school had for our athletic training program. You know, we eventually built up to having four athletic trainers. I think that's kind of a milestone just in a short amount of time. But really just the level of respect that our coaching staff, that our student athletes, that our community had for athletic training.
Okay, so tell me a little bit more. Built up to four athletic trainers. Talk a little bit about what does that look like right now, and then maybe a few of the steps that y'all did to get there.
Well, I think the first thing is, and I think Jamie has alluded to this in her talks before, is that, you know, the first thing you have to do is you have to go in and put your feet on the ground and get to work. And, you know, we didn't just go in and say, hey, we need four athletic trainers. We had to, you know, we had to prove that it was something that we needed. And the work that Jamie and our other athletic trainers did, you know, they developed a level of trust from our athletes and our parents. Then it became something that they, you know, that they really needed. And so when we asked for it, when we had parents and students advocating for it, certainly made it a lot easier. You know, I'm in a new district now, and we're trying to go the same route. And I talked to our, you know, to our trainers, and the bottom line is our quality of care and how we treat people is the first step. We don't just go in and say we need more. We have to prove, you know, that it's necessary. And I'm really proud of the fact that Jamie and them did such a great job of that.
Fantastic. So the four athletic trainers, is that like two at the high school and one at each of the intermediates, or?
So we have, in Brenham, we had one high school, one junior high. So it was actually three at the high school and one at the junior high. One at the high school taught pretty full-time. And so you had pretty much a full-time head athletic trainer, full-time assistant athletic trainer, and then a second assistant that taught and was athletic training. And of course, we tried to balance that schedule so that the one in the classroom had time to do the classroom piece of it. So, and that junior high athletic trainer came in pretty clutch when we had games over at the stadium, because the junior high was the old high school. So the stadium's actually at the junior high. So that junior high athletic trainer became very useful when we had that venue going and we were off campus at maybe a soccer tournament or baseball games in the spring. I can't remember if I said this before, but in the spring, the only events on campus at Brenham High School was softball and basketball. So everything else was off campus.
Gotcha. All right. So that's obviously that's a goal for most, is that, you know, that three athletic trainers, or, you know, at least one for the junior highs, that kind of thing. So it's definitely something that I continue to work for. And I think for me, one of the things that I need to encourage is the parents or the students asking for it and saying, hey, this is what we need. You know, obviously I know the coaches in the junior highs and, you know, I talk to them, but I think it's, you know, they have to ask for it. They have to get their kids to ask for it. But it starts with positively impacting the kids that I have now, and then their parents saying, why isn't anybody doing this for my younger son, my younger daughter? And so it's definitely the goal. All right. Some of the biggest win, you said, positively impacting the culture and the perspective of athletic trainers in the community and in the school, and building up to four athletic trainers. What are some of the smaller victories that you guys felt like you accomplished while there?
So I know they're small, like you said, but just little things that I think had even been asked for before. But so a window in the office door of the athletic training room. I felt very uncomfortable when I would take an athlete in there to have a private conversation, maybe get a parent on the phone for whatever reason, but just taking them into a closed office with no window, it just made me uncomfortable with, you know, the litigious world that we live in today. And so just getting a window in the door, and then the hydration system upgrade, I think was huge. So I mean, there was just no way I was going to use.
We literally had trash cans that had hoses and pumps on them, like literally Rubbermaid trash cans. That was our watering system. So,
and I just couldn't. I said, I will do almost anything else. So we'll get the PVC pipes and cut holes in them and just turn on the water if we have to, like, you know, the old days. So, but I just could not bring myself to use the trash cans. So that was a major improvement. We got radios for the sideline and for practices for the athletic trainers. That was pretty big, just being able to communicate better. I think there was, I mean, obviously there had to have been some others. We got leg press. Oh, we got lockers for the students in the athletic training program. They didn't have lockers. And so in the field house, there was a softball locker room and a girls soccer locker room that kind of shared a bathroom. And we were able to get some lockers, extra lockers put in there for my students. So,
yeah.
And then one big change that we made that what made sense in my mind that I probably could have communicated better on the front end is we shut down the gym athletic training room and moved everything to the field house. The gym athletic training room just didn't have the space to do rehab. It didn't have the functionality. Not that the field house one was that much bigger, but just at the beginning, we only had two athletic trainers. And so pulling all of our resources into one space made a huge difference. But obviously our gym sports weren't real thrilled about that. They felt like something was being taken away versus growing, you know, and better utilizing what we had. So I think I could have communicated that a little better on the front end.
And I think that's key. I kind of went through that in my new position. There were two different offices and the trainer's office separately. And therefore what I saw, the communication wasn't as good, that they didn't work together as a team. It was like one trainer had certain athletes and the other trainer saw a different set of athletes. Just wasn't very cohesive. So we moved away from it. But I think that's important. I know it's important to be up in the gym area, but I think it's important that the trainers are together a bunch.
All right. So what was kind of the solution for your current situation, your current workplace, to get them to work together?
Well, you know, we're brand new. We have a one brand new head athletic trainer. The other head athletic trainer has been there for a while, but I meet with him at least once a month together. Early on, we met probably once every 2 weeks, just trying to, you know, to change the culture a little bit. And, you know, not that it was bad, but I think I have a vision, especially after working with Jamie, that we can improve it. And so they meet with me directly at least once a month. And then we just, you know, we just talked about the importance of, I think those trainers need to be together. I think they, you know, just the communication, if you're in two completely different areas, I think certain things fall through the cracks and we're not as strong individually as we are if we work together.
So the area where I'm currently like recording the podcast from, this is what used to be the athletic training room. It's essentially like almost like a hallway. And there's really only one workstation. And so for years I worked in the classroom, which was separated by, you know, you had to go out the door, down the hallway, through another door. And there was really no conversations whenever me and Bill were here. And then I noticed something similar is that if we're close in proximity, we're going to have just random conversations. Hey, what did you think about this kid? Hey, you know, what are you doing this weekend? You know, and you're just sharing a little bit more of life. And so once they made Wi-Fi available in the schools, they made it so I could use the laptop here in the same room while she was on the computer or, you know, something like that. And so just creating that shared work environment, I think, is really good when you have a team. You know, obviously having a private office where the two of you can work would be better, because then you can have, you know, some private conversations with the door closed or whatever it is. But even if it is you're sharing one common area, I think that's a really good move on building that cohesiveness, like you said. So
one thing that I did when I went to Brenham, I had not done it in a previous school district. I actually saw it in another athletic training room and modified it, but I could not have anticipated how it would really benefit the athletes and the athletic training conversation. But in the athletic training room for morning treatments, for any treatments, but specifically morning treatments when it's kind of bigger and heavier and you're just trying to punch things out a little faster, we have a dry erase board. We would put the athlete's initials, the injury, right, left, and then write out the plan for the kid. So if we were going to start with heat, then do STEM, maybe do leg press, you know, just whatever we're going to do. We listed out what we planned for that athlete. and it would just be this running list. And then as they did it, we would check off where they were at in their plan. And seems pretty simple, but what that does is previously when I would bounce from table to table working with athletes, the plan was just in my head, and your athletic training coworker can't jump in and help when it's just in your head. And so getting it written out on the board really helped with the coworker saying, oh, hey, it looks like you're at this point now. I can show you how to do that. This is what she wants you to do. But then the second piece that really helped is when I'm writing out what I want to do with them, but maybe Brittany worked with that athlete last versus me. And she was able to look up and say, oh, we did that yesterday. And that was super easy for that athlete. We need to ramp it up a little bit, progress them. And so it really made a difference with our ability to progress those athletes in rehab, doing something like that. But, and you can't do that when you're separated, and you can't do it when you're building that plan in your head and not communicating it, which is, you know, normal because it's so busy in the morning. You're not going to
also help with the student trainers.
Yeah. It helped with the students in the program too, because if that's something that we have worked with them on, they can get the athlete out over to the BOSU ball and get the BOSU ball out for them. They can go and get the TheraBand for them. And then when they're entering into, we use rank one, when they're entering things, then they can, they don't have to say, hey, what'd you do? What'd you do? What'd you do? They can go in and go ahead and put those in and let us vet that later that it was accurate. So I think it was probably one of the biggest game changers that we did as far as talking about being cohesive. And also the coaches could come in and see what athletes had been in there, because we would also add in what sport they were just to help with the rank one entry. And so our coaches could pop in and see who had shown up. And instead of us having to stop everything we're doing, they're like, okay, yeah, that kid showed up. So it was probably one of the best things that I incorporated.
Especially when you have an AD that struggles with technology, it's a lot easier to go look at the board and get through rank one.
Yeah, well, so on rank one, you can send the daily treatment email thing. So that's what we try to do. So we've incorporated rank one a lot. And actually, the idea about the whiteboard, we use that some, but we will use Google Docs. And so it's like Sophia will make up a rehab plan for, you know, either it'll say this week or for 2 weeks. And it'll say, you know, it may be Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you're doing this, and Tuesday, Thursday, you're doing this, or whatever it is. And then we can have the kids write down on that paper what they're doing. So for us, it works better for them to have an individual sheet of paper where they take their plan and, you know, hey Jackson, what's this? I don't know what that is. Sophia, what is that? Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. You know, that kind of thing. So then we work together there, but the kid knows what they're doing. I know what they're doing.
Yes. It's not just living in someone's head.
Yeah. So if I write on a whiteboard, everybody's going to be saying, what is that thing? What is that thing? 'Cause my writing's terrible. And so if you can write kneeling and, you know, you have a big space for a whiteboard, cool, do that. It makes it easier for everybody to see. Or if you want to print it up on Google Docs, or, you know, if like for us, I could actually create it on the Google Doc and then share it with the student. So then they have it in their email and they could always see it and they could look it up on their phone. Most of the times the kids will just take a picture of the workout and then they constantly have it on their phone.
The individual paper is actually similar to the idea of where I got it from is how they did it. Mm-hmm. It's just for me, I had a hard time building plans for athletes that may not show up. I had a hard time. And this was in the very beginning of getting to Brenham. And so it wasn't real consistent that kids would come in. And so I just didn't spend the time to make early plans until I knew they were going to show up all the time. So.
Yeah. Definitely. We don't, you know, we don't create them until we know, okay, this kid is coming in consistently or something like that. All right. So we've talked about a lot of the wins. Hopefully you can come up with some more as we have this conversation, but are there any regrets, anything that you felt left undone?
I don't think so. Like I said in the last podcast, that, you know, I've worked with some great athletic trainers. I've never worked with anybody that I trusted quite so much in terms of not just the athletic training, but Jamie essentially became my DFO, my director of football operations. And, you know, any question that I had pertaining to our football program. You know, I typically ran that by her to get her input. I wish I would have done that a little bit sooner. It was just foreign to me. But I think the perspective of an athletic trainer, they just look at things through a different lens, and it's valuable. It's very valuable as an athletic director and head football coach to get that perspective as you make decisions. So if I had a regret, it might be that I didn't probably lean on her earlier than I did.
And then I guess for me, one, I came in a little strong on how I treated Coach Allen, and I would definitely change that if I could. As far as anything left undone, when I decided to leave Brenham, it was a very unexpected change. I had an opportunity to come to Waller with some really neat, it was a neat opportunity and something that came up kind of in the summer. And so not something that I was necessarily looking for. And so there are some things that I kind of left to Megan, who is now the head athletic trainer. She had come in and was the assistant for a year, had been at Hutto before. And so some things that I feel like I left undone, I think there was just so if you look at what I had at Rutter in Bryan ISD, and what I had done in Brenham, it looks so much different. That the clinic that I ran in at Rutter was organized, and everything had a place. And at the end of the day, it was spotless, everything put away. And it's not that it wasn't that way in Brenham. It's just so many other priorities had to be addressed. And so if the BOSU ball wasn't turned exactly the right way to fit on the shelf, I didn't always spend the time to fix that when I left, or the storage room was always a wreck because the shelving wasn't right. And it's just things like that, that I know I had, I mean, but I was at Rutter for 11 years. And so by the time I opened that school, so it's a little bit different. And so I think there's just some, there were some organizational things that I had neglected, or I wouldn't even say neglected, just hadn't prioritized because we were working on some other things that took more energy and time. But the neat thing is Megan stepped in and is able to accomplish those things because I think of the work we had previously done and the foundation we laid. So she's getting to kind of build that. And I think that would be exciting for an athletic trainer. So.
Yeah, it's funny how just a change can make a difference. And so like in Katy High School, you know, they're like perennial state title contenders, right? Once their athletic trainer moved up to like the district level and somebody moved in, Eddie Smith, he's a physical therapist / athletic trainer. So, well, now they're getting all this new equipment and all this new attention because there's just been a change in athletic trainer. There's really not been a change in much else other than the athletic trainer, but now they have blood flow. They have all these other different opportunities, availabilities, improvements, and changes. And, you know, again, Jamie came in. Okay, well, here's the biggest issues. Here's what I have to tackle. I want it to look like this, but I had to take care of this. And so I love that. And you see that here with me as well. You know, like Bill did so much here of basically maintaining where he was teaching four classes of math and I was teaching four classes of biology. Well, now it's changed to this, and now it's changed to this, and now it's come even so, you know, like it looks so much better in the short time that Sophia's here than the whole time that me and Bill were here. But that's because there was a change, but then there's, you know, been multiple changes with new change in athletic director, change in principal, change in administration. And so those changes can be really good if it's, you know, for progress. So I love that y'all are doing that. Jamie, we mentioned the master's degree last time, and you said most of the conversation will fit better here as we're talking about. So tell me a little bit more about that.
So I mentioned that sometime back, I went back to get a degree in public health, and I really did that because I was actually ready to leave the profession of athletic training. I didn't feel like I was necessarily happy in my work, and I wasn't challenged, and especially being married to an athletic trainer that's really strong in his career, I just felt like we were a little pigeonholed on what we could do career-wise. And so to have a little variety in my background, I felt like would be very helpful. And so I got my degree in public health. And then through that, I actually determined that I wasn't unhappy in my career. I actually really loved athletic training. And it was more of a perspective, a mindset for myself that I needed to adjust. And so I'm really happy that I didn't necessarily leave the profession of athletic training. But so I finished that degree sometime before leaving Rutter, several years before. And so when I went to Brenham, I had, well, in Bryan, I did a lot of school safety with my degree. It was public health with an emphasis on school safety. And so my capstone project, all that was done in school safety. So I moved to Brenham and I set down all the school safety stuff. I just didn't have time for it with the changes I wanted to make in Brenham with athletic training. So I set it all down and then so went to Brenham in 2018. And then the pandemic hit in the spring of 2020. And so at that point, Coach Allen and I had really had worked very well together after our bumpy start. And then, and a pandemic for an athletic trainer with a degree in public health is pretty on point with my background. And so, and then also just having Josh also in athletic training, we got to work pretty quick working from home on what does a reentry plan look like? What does cohorting look like? What does the plan look like whenever you've got the CDC, you've got the health department, you've got the UIL, and then you've got just what the school does or doesn't want to do. And so Josh and I worked on this side-by-side plan of all those different agencies and what their recommendations were for reentry. And then of course, one would change this week and the next one would change that next day. And so you're constantly adjusting the plan and trying to fit, make this puzzle all work. But through that, Coach Allen and I started working on what does it look like to gather back equipment from baseball and softball and track, because they all left for spring break thinking we were going to come back and then we didn't. And so what did it look like to get that equipment back? What did it look like to get athletes their things back that were in lockers? And so working on that plan, I don't necessarily know that the degree in public health necessarily equipped me to have that ability to build those plans with Coach Allen, but it certainly helped me understand what was about to start happening with the pandemic. And it was pretty wild being able to have those conversations on a platform that most people in a school district don't have somebody that have that kind of background. So it was really neat that Coach Allen recognized that and actually mentioned that in the cabinet level conversations that promoted me to that level of conversation.
Our leadership team in Brenham, we were meeting and, you know, discussing what it might look like as an entire district. And I was just in that meeting as representing the athletic department, but it just was evident to me that they could use, you know, Jamie and the things that she's capable of doing. And so I mentioned that to the superintendent at the time, and they brought her on board. And, you know, from that day forward, she's really, really elevated. She's done a great job.
And we know athletics was the first thing to start. Or to reopen during the pandemic. And so what we built, I want to say it was in the summer, it was myself, Coach Allen, and Coach Faber, who was running our strength and conditioning. What Coach Faber did to spread those kids out, to cohort, and then all the coaches coming together to take temperatures and to log everybody in as their cohort so that if one kid went down, we didn't wipe out the whole program. And the first time we had a positive case that wiped out a cohort, and writing the letter and calling parents and doing the contact tracing, it was, I mean, everyone knows that that was just such a crazy time in athletics. But then when he mentioned that I needed to be in that room as they were trying to reopen school, you know, I told him, look, this is how we did it in athletics, and we don't have to recreate the wheel. We just maybe tweak it a little bit so that we can apply the same principles in our school setting.
One of the things that I've noticed this year between last year we took in our second foster, which is now adopted daughter, and that was in October. And honestly, all of last year, we were kind of like drowning, you know, just with the adjustments from her, the whole dynamic shift in the family. There was a car accident that totaled the car. And then my son was also in the hospital for several days, like in and out for whatever. And so last year, like, I was just exhausted. I remember that one of the coaches got upset with me because I was sitting on the golf cart during practice. And, you know, it normally it's not a big deal, but this year I've noticed, you know, when I'm out there at practice, like I'm walking around, I'm talking to the coaches or, hey, you know, what about this? And sometimes it's about football. Sometimes it's about an athlete, but sometimes it's about, did you sell your house yet? You know, that kind of thing. Or I'll go stand behind the field goal while they're kicking field goals because, you know, they're short coaches. That's cool. I'll be out there. I'll help out. You know, I'll pick up some of the stuff after practice while y'all move to the other side of the field and, you know, or I'll help my kids drag the stuff. And there's a big difference in the way whenever I walk into the coach's office, you know, now they're, you know, like talking trash, which is a normal thing for coaches. They're going to, you know, talking trash too or about me versus last year. It was just kind of like silence, I guess. And I think just realizing that, you know, we're going to go through stages, but whenever you have those conversations, like you guys did, you work through those hard times and then you can build that trust. There's a much different level of, oh yeah, here, we'll take care of that for you. Or, hey, we'll elevate this situation, or, you know, the ice machine, we'll make sure we'll make those phone calls. And any of those small things comes from building that relationship. You know, not everybody has an athletic director that knows and trusts athletic trainers or wants to elevate that program. And so, again, it's just so important for us as athletic trainers to realize, like Jamie did, I can't take care of all the organizational stuff. I can't put away every single scrap of tape right now because we have two athletic trainers and 200 athletes every morning, that kind of thing. So just realize this is a priority. Talk to the people that are around you, let them positively impact the people that are around them and go from there. So we're going
to. I think that what you're saying is so important. And one thing I really had to realize is, especially coming from Rutter, where I had a very well-established program, when I walked in the room, like it was going to be my way and everything else, I really had to reevaluate my delivery. In how, I mean, I had to rebuild. It was very humbling. I'm not going to lie. It was very humbling to know I had to rethink my delivery on how I talk to coaches, how I talk to athletes, because I had to not rebuild. I had to build a relationship and a respect with these people that had previously never really thought much of the athletic training program. And it just that, and I don't know that there's a fault there. It's more that the program had just never been given the resources and the support. I think maybe because they didn't know what it could potentially do for everybody. And so going in the way I did, I'm very lucky that that I didn't ruin relationships right off the bat because of my strong personality and how I thought I was going to do it. And I had a commute at that point. I had an hour commute, and I think it really helped me think through, okay, what does it look like today if I do this? Or who do I need to talk to? And what does that need to look like? And having that second chance to rethink how I was going to have those conversations was really a good thing for me. But I just had to really change how I delivered my personality.
I think delivery is key. I think we mentioned it in previously, but you know, when you're going to a coach and you're going to tell him that, you know, his star athlete is out with a concussion, or, you know what, we're going to have lightning today, or whatever, the delivery of that message is important. And I know as an athletic trainer, you have a duty and an obligation to say those things, but the way that you say it, it means a lot, you know, because you're affecting a coach's livelihood. Like, if it's a big game and my star athlete can't play, and we don't win, I may not have a job type deal. And so it's a big deal for both sides. So I think having the delivery is a big deal. And then just to go back on the respect thing, when Jamie first got to Brenham, there probably wasn't a whole lot of respect from the athletes or the coaches for trainers. There may have been. It didn't appear to be to me. But two things stand out to me. One, I used to do these character talks with our athletes during offseason. And, you know, each of the coaches would take a week and they would, whatever their topic would be, would talk to the kids. And the kids would have to, you know, do questions on it and that type of deal. Well, I asked Jamie, maybe after the second year, it was relatively early. But again, when she first came in, these people didn't respect her a whole lot. She gave a speech to our entire football program. And I don't even remember what the topic was, but when it was like every kid was like sitting up, paying attention. And when she finished, it was like standing ovation. And it just, I know that's a minor thing, but to me, I was so proud of how far we had come in just a short amount of time. And then one other thing, it got to the point the last couple of years we redid our hydration system, as she said. I don't know how many cows we had, but we had all kinds of, equipment out on the field. But after every single practice, the coaching staff and the kids would put all that stuff up for the trainers. And like, it wasn't really anything that I asked them to do. It just over time that, you know, people respected them and how hard they worked. And there wasn't a day that went by. And it was a chore to put those things up. They had to drive all the way around the field house and lock them up. But I was really, really impressed by that.
I was going to say that earlier, and then the conversation kind of passed us by. And so I'm glad we came back to it. But there were 2 to 3 coaches at the end of the day that would come get the cart keys and would drive all the water cows around the building. Like I said, putting them up was not easy. You had to lift them over, like it was a cement porch kind of, but it was on a hill. And so it was a real chore to put these things up, and coaches did it every single day. I circled back and made sure they got turned off, plugged in, you know, all that. But that was such a piece that helped me so much, because at that point, we all know injuries happen at the most inopportune times. Like, so you're over here trying to drain a cow and someone gets hurt. Didn't even see what happened because you're doing something else. Or we were able to go ahead and start treatments after practice, getting kids home because of the coaching staff working with the water cow situation. So I think it actually became kind of a thing they wanted to do, because maybe it got them out of locker room duty or laundry duty or something else. But just watching those coaches do that, I had never had that at another school before. And so for them to take the time to do it, they did it well. Our kids or the athletes would drag them over to the side so that they were all in one place. But watching the coaches do that, then you would start seeing the athletes doing it too. You know, they started picking up things, or if they saw a water bottle on the ground, they picked it up and say, "Hey man, don't do that," you know, or whatever it is. So it really does translate to the kids. And I can remember one particular athlete that I didn't think cared for me much in one of our last year there. But I remember him holding the door open for me to go into the building before him. And I am confident that that is something he witnessed with Coach Allen, the coaching staff, watching them be polite and hold doors open. And I think it really made a big difference in those kids to see that civility and a helping hand. So.
All right, so we're going to continue the conversation. We're talking about how you're going to carry what you've taken here into the next stage and what that looks like in 5 and 10 years from now. And so when we come back, so we'll talk about Jamie Woodall has given her email is J-W-O-O-D-A-L-L at Waller, which is WALLERISD.net. Coach Elliot Allen has given D-Allen2 at BISDT 2@BTX.org. So it's DALLEN 2@B as in boy, ISD as in dog, TX.org. Again, those will be linked in the show notes. I am Mr. Jeremy Jackson on most social medias. Twitter is usually kind of my preference there, but you can find me on most social media there. And again, if you want to reach out to them, find out what they did, get one of those plans. I know a lot of those things are in the secondary school. What is it called, Jamie? The
pass.
The pass. But what's the other one? The one you get the banner for?
Oh, Safe Sports School Award.
Yeah. The safe sports thing.
that was another accomplishment. Sorry.
Yeah. So there you go. So the Safe Sports School, it has a whole list of things to go through. And I know Bart Peterson, we've talked about it on here. If you've done the Safe Sports School, then you're about 75% of the way to pass. And so it's really just a good thing to keep those going. And those are really good systems and checklists. And Jamie mentioned those, and those are all fully available on the NATA resource page for NATA members. So check that out there. Again, y'all mentioned hydration units. I love Frio Hydration. So anybody looking for a new hydration unit, if you want to get the best, go with Frio. Their quality service, fantastic. Customer service, amazing. So check them out. This is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/thegoodlife. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/thegoodlife. So for Jeremy Jackson, Coach Elliot Allen, Jamie Woodall, and the Sports Medicine Broadcast, that is a wrap. Thanks.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.